Okay, good afternoon. Welcome to TechEd 2012. Thank you for coming. It's well known that all statistics are lies. Data, I like that one. All statistics are lies. I need the audience to give me a number. I'd like maybe a small number, please. I prefer 12. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, to start this talk, a new cloud application is born every 12 seconds. Statistics show this. And the question we have this afternoon, these are great applications, valuable applications, things that you want, things that your organization needs, applications that you want to build. The question this afternoon is, how are we going to manage identity management for these applications? How are we going to build these applications so that they can use identity? How are we going to address the unique needs of these cloud applications? How are we going to connect them to all of the investments that we've been making for the past decade or two on identity management? My name is Stuart Kwan, and I'm a program manager in the Windows Azure Active Directory team at Microsoft. This afternoon, I'm going to tell you how we are extending Active Directory into the cloud to meet the needs of these applications. We're creating a new essential platform service. You can think of the other essential platform services in Windows Azure to be things like compute and storage. To that, we're adding identity as a service. We call this service Windows Azure Active Directory, and it's not like the Active Directory that you're familiar with today, but it is related to the Active Directory that you're familiar with today. In this afternoon's talk, I'm going to describe why it's different and how it addresses the unique design requirements of cloud-based applications. So we'll talk about how it's different. We'll talk about why it's different. And then finally, I'm going to talk about a developer preview that's coming so that you can try Windows Azure Active Directory yourself. But to begin, I'd like to talk briefly about where we're at today. I remember the good old days, if you will. Actually, I'll just call them the old days. I remember the old days. The old days, you had your intranet. It had applications on it. You had to sign in separately to every application. You had to provision each application separately. People remember that? It goes back a little ways, maybe the early days of TechEd even. And for the past really decade or two, a lot of organizations have been spending great investments to build enterprise directories, to build identity management systems so that we could consolidate identity management for applications, so that we could increase security and reduce cost. And ironically, the introduction of cloud applications, and as organizations are embracing cloud applications, it's kind of threatening almost to reverse some of those hard-fought gains we've had in consolidating these environments. In many cases, in order to use these applications, you get into a place where you need to use a separate username and password to sign in for your users. You need to manually provision the applications, or maybe there's some semi-automated way that you're provisioning users into these applications. Anybody here using, I know it's kind of a funny definition, how many people are using some sort of software as a service or cloud application today? That's a good number. And does anybody here have to do a funny thing where you upload like an Excel file or some sort of file every evening? Yeah, in order to provision those applications so that you're creating users, deleting users, updating users, you have to do that. Now, there's some technology out there that helps mitigate this problem somewhat, like federation technology, which enables single sign-in. But in the end, it doesn't really address the whole problem. And the root cause of this is actually very, very simple. And it has to do with the difference, one of the key differences between an application that's running in the cloud and an application that's running on premises. Does anyone want to take a guess at this? It's the premise of basically the entire session. And once you get this, you're welcome to step up and leave because you want. Enjoy the rest. But anybody? The key difference here is there's no way for these cloud applications, no easy way for these cloud applications to connect to the directory the same way that on-premises applications connect to the directory. Now, we've been actually dealing with this problem ourselves at Microsoft, and we've created a solution for it that we call Windows Azure Active Directory. It's actually running today, and it underpins Office 365. We built it concurrently with Office 365, knowing that we would make it available more broadly, and now is that time. There's hundreds of thousands of organizations and millions of users who are being supported by this particular service. It really came about with our first turn of the crank on cloud software as a service applications. You remember the BPOS, the Business Productivity Online Services offering. When we originally designed BPOS, we looked at what it would take to, say, take an Exchange server in the cloud or a SharePoint server in the cloud and actually have it talk directly to on-premises Active Directory. And it turned out to be completely impractical. It wasn't going to work. The simplest way to explain it, or one of the simple ways to explain it, are simple things like performance. Those applications, in order to have the response time they needed to have a very fast query to the directory for a variety of end-user-driven operations. And they simply were not going to get that with the latency of calling down to on-premises and coming back up into the cloud. So it became very apparent to us that what we needed to do was take the directory up into the cloud and get it near to the application, and that would solve at least the performance problem. It turned out to have a set of other very interesting side effects as well that were quite useful. Wow. I could tell an interesting story about lights and meetings that my dad told me. He was a diplomat, and one day he was in this room filled with people, literally like this United Nations meeting, and one of the attendees was dreadfully bored, starting to fall asleep, and he was leaning back. And he leaned back and he hit the light switch on the wall and turned the lights off, and they're like, oh my God, what's going on? Anyway, I digress. So back to, I'm afraid I might do that every once in a while because I love to tell these stories. Hopefully you haven't heard them before if you've come and see me talk. Where was I? Oh yes, I was talking about Active Directory in the cloud. It also became apparent to us that we simply couldn't take Active Directory as we know it today and just run it in the cloud and meet the needs of these applications, that we needed something that was a little different. It had a little different programmatic shape. I'm going to spend a good part of today's conversation talking about what that shape is. Now, if you were to look under the covers, though, of Windows Azure Active Directory, what you'd find is a heavily modified version of Active Directory that was designed to work at internet scale and be multi-tenant. So the echoes of Active Directory as you know it today are there, but many, many different, there are many, many different things about it. There's two different functions that Windows Azure Active Directory performs in the context of Office 365. One is that it projects Active Directory into the cloud so that an organization can manage their directory as one. They can manage their on-premises Active Directory, and the information flows up into the cloud and is available, and they can have single sign-on to both the applications that are on-premises and the applications that are in the cloud. We also found that there was a large set of customers out there who had no Active Directory or didn't want to have an on-premises Active Directory, and Azure Active Directory serves as their only identity management service. So it's not strictly about projecting Active Directory as we know it today into the cloud. I said about, so everyone now knows where I'm from. Anybody? Canada, thank you very much. I hope the accent doesn't interfere with today's presentation. I'm sure we'll struggle through it, though. It is subtle. I've lived in the United States for quite a while now. My very first talk I did was, I think it was like the PDC in 1997. A fellow came up to me afterwards, I did a talk on DNS, domain name system. I was talking about the legal set of characters in the domain name system, and it's A to Z, 0 to 9 in the hyphen, and I'd said A to Z. And he came up to me afterwards and said, listen, you're going to do talks in the United States. You have to learn the proper way to say the characters. It's Z, it's Z, and the way to remember that is the band isn't called ZZ Top. But anyway, I go on. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about Azure Active Directory and making it now available to all kinds of applications. Today, or up to this point, it's something that we've been using for Office 365, and now you've heard we're making it available for use with Windows Intune. We'll be making it available for use for all of Microsoft's cloud applications in the long run so that organizations can have one single identity management system they're using to access all of their different assets that are running in the Microsoft cloud, but we also want it to work with applications that you build, custom applications, or ISV applications, any application. We want all cloud applications to be able to use this, this mechanism. The more applications that are using it, the more value the organization can get out of this by consolidating their management. Okay, so to do this, we have to meet the design goals, or if you will, it has to be met to work with, it has to work with cloud applications. Cloud applications aren't designed the same way that we design on-premises applications. So that means that the shape of this thing that's in the cloud isn't going to have the same shape as the one that's on-premises. But you're probably wondering what the relationship is, and I'm going to take a little side drop here to talk about the relationship and the differences between Windows Server Active Directory, as we know it today, and Windows Azure Active Directory. Since Windows Azure Active Directory has to have a different shape to it, programmatic access to it, than the on-premises Active Directory, but we still want them to be managed as the same, and we still want to have single sign-on, that means we need to connect up the Windows Azure Active Directory and the Windows Server Active Directory. We do that through a synchronization and federation mechanism. And that allows you to manage this all as one. We like to just refer to this as the directory, both of these pieces together. We have one on-premises is simply projected into the cloud. Today, that arrow points in one direction. And tomorrow, in the fullness of time, we want the arrow to point in both directions with respect to things like synchronization so that you can manage in either place. And it really just looks like one directory. It has a presence in both, both on your network, and it has a presence in the cloud. If you want to learn more, by the way, about this particular relationship, there's a talk by a fellow named Ross Adams and another fellow named Jono Look. They're here this week. They're going to talk about integrating Active Directory with Office 365, because that's the way it looks today. And if you want to learn more about that, please go to that session. You might also just be interested in, hey, it's not that I want to use the software as a service cloud applications that are out there today. What I want to do is take applications that I know and love today that I run on premises. I want to run them in VMs in the cloud. What can I do there? Well, we also have been working on running Active Directory, Windows Server Active Directory, in these VMs in the cloud. And you can go to another talk by a fellow named Dean Wells, excellent Active Directory presenter. In fact, it's this afternoon, I think, at 3 o'clock, to learn about running Windows Server Active Directory in VMs in the cloud. For the remainder of this talk, though, we're going to look at what this Windows Azure Active Directory is and how it addresses the unique needs of cloud applications, not the traditional applications that you might be running today. Which brings us back to my original thesis point, which was the main reason why the cloud applications are different is that they can't connect to the directory. So how are we going to connect these cloud applications to the cloud directory? Let's first take a look at what a typical cloud application looks like, a typical software as a service application. We've been studying these applications. We've been talking to the developers that build them. We see this pattern over and over and over again. On the server side, one or more web applications and one or more web service APIs. On the client side, a huge diversity of clients. Browsers running on all manner of platforms, installed applications on PCs and mobile devices, and then other servers or services that are also calling that web service API. It's very simple, for reasons I'll talk about in a moment. Very simple architecture, very simple layout. This is the way the applications are built. The key takeaway that we have from this, though, is the diversity point. The applications are built on all manner of devices, platforms, and languages. They are in Java, they're in PHP, they're on BlackBerries, iOS, Windows, Windows Phone, in Amazon's cloud, in the Azure cloud, on Heroku. They're everywhere, and they're written in every different way. In order to satisfy the needs of these applications, we really need to have reach. We can't go and take Active Directory as we know it today and say, hey, it's Kerberos and LDAP, go ahead and connect to it. Because we're not going to find a lot of devices, for example, that have Kerberos libraries on them or LDAP libraries on them. That's just not going to work. So we have to change our approach. That brought us to three design principles that acknowledge that the cloud design point, as we like to call it, is different than the design point from which Active Directory was originally built. If you think about Active Directory, when it was built in the late 90s, the situation was a perimeter, PCs, server-based applications, your users. And now the environment is very different now. Now it's all manner of devices, everyone on the planet, and it's always connected on the internet. So we came down to these three simple design principles. The first was to maximize reach to platforms. And we do that by focusing on HTTP and REST, because every device you'll find today, frankly, has an HTTP stack on it. And there's actually a little more to this, and I'll talk about it in a moment. The second is, Active Directory in the cloud is still the organization's directory. It's a multi-tenant system. There isn't really an Azure Active Directory that's one thing. There are only tenants of Azure Active Directory. It's the organization's data to own. We're simply running the system, running the service for the organization. And we took great pains to make sure that we continued the same logical security model in the cloud as we do on premises. These things are not, if you will, from a security model point of view, intermingled in one big space. They are distinct security boundaries around each one of the tenants in the multi-tenant system. And then finally, we knew that we would have to optimize for availability, consistent performance, and the ability to scale. This thing has to provide reliable performance, no matter if we've got 1 million users or 10 million users or 100 million users. That is to say, consistent performance. It should just always behave the same way. It has to be available because it's in the critical path of any kind of interesting thing you want to do with a cloud application. You can't, unless you can sign in, you can't do anything. And the basic answer here is, we just have to keep it simple. Our distinguished engineer in the identity team, in the Active Directory team, back at Microsoft, likes to say that things that are simple on premises at low scale are hard at cloud scale. And things that are hard on premises at small scale are impossible at cloud scale. So that forces us to really ratchet down what we do in the cloud and just keep things very, very simple. And you'll see that echo through. Again, you'll see all of these design principles echo through the implementation of Windows Azure Active Directory. You know, we can't talk about directory and the shape of directory without first talking about how we access the directory and how we read the information that applications want to get at. User information, group information, relationships, all those different attributes and stuff. We have made all of that this information available in Windows Azure Active Directory through an HTTP REST-based API. So you're going to be using the usual HTTP primitives like get, patch, delete to do the usual CRUD operations in the directory. I'm still like an old LDAP head, and I'm learning. So bear with me where I trip over my words. The response types can come back in XML or in JavaScript object notation, JSON. And if you're unfamiliar, if you're a directory person, you're a directory geek and identity geek, and you haven't learned JSON yet, I think you'll be delighted because it's very, very easy to learn. And then we've made this API that you use, the directory graph API, we call it, on the directory, also compatible with OData v3, so that if you need to do a more complex query, instead of something that's simple that you can do through the usual HTTP primitives, then you can do that. So if you need to do a deep query or filter certain results, something that we couldn't obviously represent through an HTTP verb, then you have OData that lets you enrich those queries. In order to access that endpoint, we use OAuth 2.0, Open Authentication. You need to go get a security token or an access token from OAuth, and you can use that to call the directory graph API. I'll go into some more detail on that in a moment as well. Then furthermore, we've used roles-based access control as the way that we guard the data that's in the directory. Let's take a look at an example of calling the directory graph. Now, this is how simple it is. I'm going to show the request on the screen. And what I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to tell me what this does. What does this request do? Anyone? A little louder. Well, what is it, like, in English, what is this query doing? I think I heard. It's looking for a user named ed@contoso.com, right? It's pretty simple. And I'm going to put up the response now. And get ready, there's going to be another pop quiz, so get ready. Okay, here's the response. This is the response in JavaScript object notation. JavaScript object notation, by the way, is just a way to encode name value pairs. It's really, really simple. So simple that when I ask you, what department does Ed Blanton work for in this organization? Anyone? Operations, simple, right? I've had to cram things together on the screen here, because if I showed you the actual response, it just wouldn't fit on a slide. The font would be too small. So I've edited this down. This is not exactly what you're going to get if you're looking at the response in a protocol analyzer or if you're looking at it inside your application. But you can see the usual information about a user is here, including things like relationships. By the way, that's why we call it the directory graph, because it provides both directory information and also relationship information In this case, you can see the relationship, the manager direct report relationship is here, the member of relationship of groups is what I've depicted, at least in this particular response. So that's what it looks like to call the directory graph. And we, again, chose this approach because you're going to find an HTTP stack and you're going to find JSON deserialization, serialization libraries on just about every platform. And we needed that to get the reach. Okay, let's show a quick demo. We've built an application that's an expense tracking application. And you can imagine an expense tracking application needs to know about the manager direct report hierarchy so that if an employee submits an expense report, it needs to be submitted to their manager for approval. So if you were going to have this application in a traditional SaaS model without any integration with Azure Active Directory, you'd have to upload that whole graph of your organization into the application, and you'd have to keep it up to date as things changed. And this application can simply look in the directory. It can connect directly to the directory, and it can look at that information on the fly. This particular application is running in Azure. It's an MVC3 application, and it's using an Azure Active Directory environment that's part of our pre-production test environment. So I'll ask you now, please don't go beating on this thing after you leave the talk, because you could. It's simply running on the internet. That's one of the great things about, by the way, demoing the cloud, is I don't have to bring anything with me. I've got nothing under the skirt here of this table. It's all running in the cloud. It's a beautiful thing. Nothing to carry on the airplane. But anyway, I digress. Now, what I've got here is a list of companies. Ignore these bottom two because they're part of the test environment. I've got a list of companies that I can log into with this application because this application is multi-tenant. There's a lot of different approaches that we could take here for choosing what tenant that I want to log in as into this application. In this case, I've got a list, and some people won't want to have the list of all of the people who are allowed to use the application on the login page. You could equally well have an edit field where you ask for the user's email address, and that would give you enough information. So what I'm going to do is log in with this tenant. I'm flashed to the Office 365 logon screen because this, hold on a second while I type this. This hasn't been fully rebranded yet, the Azure Active Directory still underpinning Office 365. So what you're going to see, at least now for this demo and then further into the developer preview, is that these pages are still branded like Office 365. But I'm going to go and I'm going to sign in as the tenant admin of the Azure Active Directory. And the application knows that I'm a tenant admin, so it's going to let me do special things in this application because I'm the one that signed up for it and I have godlike access in this application. I can, for example, go and I can add users to this application because in many cases with software as a service applications, not everyone in an organization is going to get access to the application. I've only bought so many licenses, so I'm going to restrict access to only those users. I'm going to use these particular authorized users in the application, but if I wanted to add more, I could easily add more by browsing the list of users in my organization. I could search or I could browse and I could just add them. I was thinking about this demo this morning and I thought, you know what would be really interesting? For an expense report application, you might want to be able to grant a tree of users in the organization access to it because, frankly, you're going to have a list of people that are using it and then their manager. So it would be nice if what we did in this particular view, which was queried out of the directory, we showed that organizational hierarchy. We could do that. It's there for the application to display. But we don't have that yet. It's a design change request I'm going to put in when I get back. So I'm not actually going to modify the users who have access to the application. Instead, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to log in as John Adams, who is one of the users who's allowed to use the app. You'll pardon these terrible URLs for the users. That's, again, because it's running in our pre-production environment. So we weren't able to apply our usual friendly domain names to this. OK, so John Adams, log in. And I'm going to have John Adams submit an expense report. So he has some expense reports he's submitted in the past, and he's come to TechEd. And I've already set up this expense report. I'm going to go ahead and submit it. Now, when I submit it, the application looks in the graph right now to find out who John Adams' manager is. and it finds out, okay, I'm going to submit it to James Madison. If I wanted to be fancier in this demo, I could go back into the management UX, and I could change his manager and then refresh this, and it would show a different user, because it does that on the fly. But let's just go ahead. All right. And submit that for approval. That goes into the applications database. If I clicked sign out here, unfortunately, we don't fully support sign out in this particular build. So instead, I'm just going to close the browser. And that's, by the way, why I'm using all these in private browsers. So I'm done with John. And now I'm going to log in as James Madison, his manager. Sorry about this typing part of the demo. And when I log in as James Madison, it can look in the database. Oh, first of all, it notices James is a manager, so we have a new tab here to approve expense reports. And when we look at that, we can see that John Adams has submitted an expense report, and we can approve it. So this is something that it's a very, very simple application, but it would be pretty difficult to set this whole thing up and show it if we were using the traditional cloud application model where you can't connect to the directory and you can't see this information. But it's very, very simple if that information is in the cloud and it's made available for the application to get at. Now, you might be asking yourself, what actually happened under the covers there? Especially if you're you're an Active Directory administrator type, you're thinking, I'm not going to let just anybody access my directory. You're going to push this stuff up into the cloud. Then how do I control what applications can see? How can I control what applications can see anything, mind you, in the application? Let's actually drill down on what happened under the covers there. So let's take a fictional company, Contoso.com, and I've got a user who wants to use a cloud application. The very first thing that has to happen is this cloud application needs to be registered in the Contoso.com directory. That's Contoso's tenant in the cloud. And the way that we register the application is an authorized user creates this thing called a service principal in the directory. You can think of it like a service account in traditional Active Directory terms. It's like a user account, but it's a little bit more. It has a name and password or a name and a secret associated with it so that the application can authenticate when it needs to call back into the directory. And then we've also assigned this service principal a role. Now, I said authorized user because this doesn't have to be constrained to be just administrators. Again, we want to continue to delegate administration for the management of all things directory as much as we can into the organization, to the people who are really responsible for doing things like purchasing applications and such. So I've said authorized user, but that could mean many, many different things. It could mean end users. It could mean managers. It depends on what an organization decides to do. And there's also a variety of different ways that this information could have been caused to get into the directory. Maybe the authorized user went to a user interface to do that. Maybe they ran a PowerShell commandlet to do that. Maybe in the future they purchased an application in a marketplace, and in the process of doing that, the marketplace automatically inserted the service principal into the directory. So there's a lot of different ways this could happen. Now that the application is registered, when the end user wants to access the application, they go to a user authentication endpoint on the directory, and they get an access token or a security token, traditional claims-based identity here, and they present that token to the application to authenticate themselves. Now, I've made this completely conceptual here because, remember, they could be at a browser, they could be on a mobile device, they could be on a PC using a Metro application, so the particular flows that are going to be executed here are different based on that form factor, but the conceptual idea is the same. User authenticates, presents the token to the cloud application. Now, in this particular application case, we saw the application further come back and query information about that user. They went and looked at the user's manager, so they knew where to submit the expense report. How does the cloud application do that? It needs to obtain an access token. I talked about this when I talked about the directory graph. It needs to get an access token, and then use that access token, or get that access token, and using its key that was on its service principal, and use that access token when it calls the directory graph API. And then finally, once it's found out more information about the user, and it could have found that information out when the user authenticated, or it could have, because the information was in the authentication token about the user, or it might have found that information out when it queried the directory graph. It can then further attach that user to information that's in the private store of the application. We're not talking about a model here where all of the application's information is somehow in the cloud directory. In the same way that all of an application's information today isn't in Active Directory. There's still a separation between application-specific data and information that is used in general by all applications. That's the kind of information that's in the directory. And one of the things, by the way, that we're interested in, that we would like to get feedback on, is it critical that we enable that directory schema to be extensible? Because that goes back to one of the things I talked about earlier about keeping the thing simple so that we could make it scale like anything and that we could have consistent performance. So schema extensibility is a really interesting question for us. Okay, now that was one class of application. There are other classes of applications that might want to do activity with the directory without being prompted by some user coming. So it might have been in the middle of the night or every 5 hours, the application wakes up, gets a token, accesses the directory to do something that it's doing, a batch job, some sort of analysis. All of those patterns are also possible. I'm just showing one of them in this little walkthrough. Okay, so in that drill down, I didn't talk about the specific protocols that we're using. And I've summarized the protocols, what we believe are the strategic protocols that we're going to invest in for Windows Azure Active Directory. And again, looking at making things simple and focusing on the having that wide breadth of applicability across platforms and devices. I talked about the Graph API and how it's REST-based. That's how we do directory access. I talked about OAuth 2 as the way to authenticate when we talk to the cloud directory. There's a protocol that's being worked on right now in a standards body called OpenID Connect. It's basically a web single sign-on protocol that's based on OAuth 2. We're very interested in this protocol to see if it can meet our needs to be a very, very simple web single sign-on protocol. If you're a developer and you've tried to do web single sign-on and you've tried to do it with, say, SAML, you know that to do SAML is not really easy. You have to go find binary, you have to go find source or binaries that does SAML. You can't really code SAML on your own in a weekend. There's some sort of acid test here where you want to be able to do single sign-on with your application and you want to do it on your own with maybe some samples in a weekend, right? We think OpenID Connect is promising in that regard. But we will support the SAML protocol because many software as a service vendors today already support the SAML protocol, and that will make it very easy for us to integrate with those existing SaaS vendors. So we're going to do SAML, and we're also doing WS Federation, because WS Federation is the native protocol in Windows Identity Foundation. So if you're building applications on .NET, we have the WS Federation support that will make those applications easy to connect. All right, there's another thing on this slide here in terms of token format that is probably new to you, this thing called the JWT, or JSON Web Token format. We call that a JOT for short, the JOT token. And the JSON Web Token is exactly what it sounds like. It's a JSON serialized security token. Again, because it's very easy on most platforms to be able to serialize and deserialize the JSON format. What JOT also describes is how you sign the token cryptographically so that it can be a security token. And that's probably the hardest part about JOT is getting the cryptography right. But it's easier to get right than some of the cryptography in these other formats because of just the nature of the serialization. All right. So there's a few scenarios that we're looking at making sure that they work really well end to end. I'm going to go through a couple of these, starting with enterprise scenarios. So the first one is one that we've talked about. I've talked about it in great deal already, and it's one that we make possible today for Office 365 customers who have on-premises Active Directory. We want to extend the directory to the cloud so that they can manage their on-premises and their cloud directories as one, and so that they can get single sign-on. And it's very straightforward, but we want it to work with a broader variety of apps than just Microsoft apps. And then there's the other case where we have a small company that has no on-premises Active Directory, and we want to make Windows Azure Active Directory be the only identity system they need. with all of the attendant identity management capability that you've grown to expect from something like on-premises Active Directory. So over time, you can expect us to be adding things like self-service password reset. These are capabilities that you couldn't live without on-premises, and you won't be able to live without if your identity system exists only in the cloud. Two developer scenarios that we're looking at in great detail are taking those existing software as a service applications that are out there and helping them integrate their applications with Windows Azure Active Directory so that they can have their new customers sign up and sign in with their Windows Azure Active Directory, which again is effectively just their Active Directory. One of the things I talked about earlier was federation only solves part of the problem with connecting your organization to a cloud application. So it turns out setting up federation is also not terribly easy today, but we can make it through Windows Azure Active Directory having a particular well-known surface area. We can make it so that it's very easy to connect up these cloud applications with Windows Azure Active Directory. We can get it down to clicking through a setup instead of having to think about, well, there's these claims that I need, and you need to write these rules, and we need to get the information out of Active Directory in the following places if you set up something like ADFS. So we can make that much easier, and we can make the act of connecting that your environment to a SaaS application for federation that much easier. And then, and that extends, by the way, beyond a single sign-on. I talk a lot about authentication, but there's also just the simple act of being able to look in the graph to find information about users, being able to look in the graph to know when users are coming and going, knowing when users are being updated. That, is, it turns out, is a very important thing for many of these software as a service applications to be aware of, because when a new user is potentially going to use the application, they might need to set aside resources. Or when a user has left the organization, they need to know how to archive, or they need to undertake actions to archive information. And sometimes they need to archive that information knowing who the manager of that user is. And this is all stuff that they can get out of Windows Azure Active Directory. The fourth scenario, or the second developer scenario, is if I'm building a brand new application from scratch, I have not written any code. And remember, in this talk, I don't know, divide by 12 seconds, there's been a lot of cloud applications. It was 12, right? I think it was 12. There's a lot of cloud applications that have been born since we started this talk. And if I'm building a brand new cloud application, then what we want Azure Active Directory to do is be all of the things that you need for your application. Many cloud applications are always going to have this idea of a local account store where people who are just, say, trialing the application or who don't want to integrate their infrastructure with the application, they want to have separate user accounts in that application. It's always going to be the case that this is going to happen. We don't want application developers, especially ones who are building their applications to run on Azure, we don't want them to have to code their own identity system. We want them to be able to use Azure Active Directory off the shelf as that identity system, both for local accounts and for allowing people to sign up with their Azure Active Directory, or allowing people to sign in using their Facebook account or their Google account or their Windows Live ID or their Google account. Those capabilities that we have today in the Windows Azure Access Control Service. All right. So I'm pleased to say that we'll be having a developer preview of Windows Azure Active Directory real soon now. Unfortunately, I can't give the exact day. But before the summer is out, there will be a developer preview. And this first developer preview is going to have a subset of the capabilities that I talked about today. So for example, the graph access will be read-only in this first drop, and it will be admin role access only. We don't have any more fine grain. So you can see everything or you can see nothing in this very first preview. And the only end-user authentication protocol that we have wired up right now is WS Federation. If you're building an application in Java or PHP, we're going to provide some samples so that you can do that sign-in with Azure Active Directory using WS Federation so that you don't have to try to figure that out yourself while we're working on the other protocols. This is not going to be a production system in any sense. It'll be under a preview SLA, and we expect that as we're getting feedback from people building applications and using the system, that we're going to be changing these interfaces. So we'll be breaking applications when we make new drops. The good thing about the cloud, or one of the different things about the cloud, is that we're able to make these drops on a relatively fast cadence. So we'll have this preview, and then we'll refresh the preview, and we'll refresh the preview, and then we'll as we're getting feedback and when we determine that this thing is in the right place for it to go general availability, then we'll be able to turn it on, and we'll stop changing the interfaces. We'll put it under a production SLA. If you want to watch for this, please watch the Windows Azure blog. We'll announce it there. Or if you are building an application today that you think, oh my gosh, this is an answer for some problems I have, and I really want to know more, please come and find me, and we can chat. There are ways that we can get you access to this ahead of time, although with some more difficulty. And we have been working with a small number of organizations and ISVs on this capability, even up to this point. So we can do that if you're interested. And finally, with this preview, I'll take that application that we built, that I demonstrated. We'll have the source of that entire application available so that you can see exactly what we were doing for the sign-in and for querying the graph. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, a new cloud application is born every 12 seconds. And what we need to do something to address the unique needs of these applications for identity management so that organizations can embrace these applications. We need a directory. We need an identity management capability that is designed to the cloud design point. As I've talked about, we can't just take Active Directory as we know it today and lift it up into the cloud. We need to have a cloud directory that has an interface that is friendly to cloud applications. And that's why we're adding Windows Azure Active Directory as a new essential platform service alongside the other essential platform services in Windows Azure. We want it to work both with Microsoft's cloud applications as well as third-party applications, ISV applications, and your applications so that organizations can have one place to manage or do identity management for all of their cloud applications, and they can do that in concert with their Active Directory that they've already got on premises and which they've been investing in over time to consolidate access to both to their on-premises applications. We'll be having that developer preview before the end of the summer, and I do hope that you'll join us. Thank you very much. So quickly, here are the related sessions I was talking about. There's the running AD on a Windows Azure VM, and that's today, 3 o'clock, Dean Wells. The AD integration with Office 365, which is on Tuesday, that's Ross. And then Vittorio Bertacci has a talk on what's new in Windows Identity Foundation and .NET 4.5 on Wednesday. And then there's a further drill down on the Graph API, some really detailed drill down by Ed Wu, SIA 322 on Thursday. And then I'll be in the Technical Learning Center at the Security and Identity booth later today if you've got questions. And I can take questions now. I think we have plenty of time for questions. No, I do not. There's a session on the Graph API on Thursday that drills down, and then there's a session on regular AD and VMs that's later today. Question? Yeah, so what you can look at it today is that the question was, what's the relationship between the access control service that's out there today and Windows Azure Active Directory? The access control service and the directory that is underneath Office 365 evolved independently. We're in the process of bringing those together into one combined service, but we're not finished yet. So today you see the Azure Access Control Service, and when you go and you get namespaces in Azure Access Control Service, you can use them for a certain set of things. Over time, what you'll find is those namespaces will grow all of the capability of Azure Active Directory, and when you go to get a namespace, you'll be getting an Azure Active Directory namespace in the fullness of time. But in the meanwhile, just because they're evolving separately, they kind of appear differently. And we've branded the Access Control Service Windows Azure Active Directory Access Control to reflect that they're coming together. So the question was, when the will they be merged before or after Azure Active Directory goes into production? Haven't announced what we're going to do exactly there yet. But we do want to bring forward all the people who have access control service. We want to bring them all forward into the Azure Active Directory world.
Hey, Stuart.
Yeah.
Here. Hey, I went out to the RSA conference this year, and the big message there was APT, Advanced Persistent Threats. You know, and I'm curious, in terms of replication of account information, does this, I mean, what I'm thinking of is almost like a read-only domain controller. I mean, I know it's not that simple, but to me it seems like we're really replicating our identity management solution to Microsoft. Are there controls in place to be able to prevent privileged accounts from being replicated and effectively being losing control of them? I mean, you think about things like in your current Active Directory today, your scheme admins, your enterprise admins, your domain admins. Those are accounts that I would think that a lot of my customers would not want to have replicated into somebody else's control. Can you talk a little bit about that, or is that being addressed in any way through this platform?
So there could be a couple of things that you're worried about there. One thing that you might be concerned about is just that if someone were to breach the system, they could figure out which accounts were schema admins. That would be one example. Another would be they might be able to find out the password, the names and passwords of those accounts. So let me deal with the latter first. We don't replicate today secrets from on-premises Active Directory into the cloud.
So
we don't need
hashes,
to.
None of the password hashes are actually replicated?
No, none of the password hashes go to the cloud.
Okay.
There may be a time in the future where we find it necessary to do that to enable certain functionality, but right now it isn't there. So the only thing that you'd be able to figure out if you were able to get into the Azure Active Directory would be, well, these accounts are members of the schema admins group. We have had some customers talk to us about, can we limit what gets replicated into the cloud? I believe that the solution that we have today doesn't have a lot of variability on what you can change, on what gets replicated and not, but that's something that we're looking at for the future to provide some more knobs on that so that you can fine-tune what gets replicated.
So then how do you control access to resources if my password hash is not in your instance of Active Directory?
Oh, it's federated. So when you set up both sync and federation, so when the user, let's say a user goes to a cloud application, and the cloud application says you need to be authenticated by Azure Active Directory, so they send you to Azure Active Directory. And at Azure Active Directory, that particular tenant for that company, it says, oh, this user's been federated, so it sends them down to the ADFS server at the organization.
Okay.
I authenticate there, and then it all unwinds from there.
I see.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
So I noticed on the matrix of protocols that we can get data in and out of the Azure Active Directory that LDAP wasn't on there.
Yes.
That was noteworthy. Maybe could talk about, as I think one of the scenarios I'm interested in is building applications in-house and moving them in and out of the cloud,
mm-hmm.
right? So the not having LDAP in Azure Active Directory and not having those other APIs for Windows Active Directory, it seems to make that story difficult. Can you speak to that a little?
So at least in this first run, we've been focusing very carefully on making sure that we do address that broad range of applications or the broad range of platforms that are out there. And there aren't a lot of platforms, as it turns out, that have a complete LDAP stack where we thought, okay, LDAP's something we definitely need to do. Now, since that time, and as we've been talking about this with a variety of developers, we found people have asked us this very question. Hey, is there something you can do to enable LDAP so that I can easily take an application and lift it up and down into the cloud? You can't just take LDAP, but the moment you take LDAP, you need to authenticate somehow, which means that you might need to lift the names and passwords into the cloud, or you might need to implement Kerberos, or you might need to implement a federated authentication mechanism for LDAP, but that's going to invalidate all the LDAP libraries that are out there, because what we'd really want is like OAuth-based access to LDAP. But, you know, okay, well, really, can we do that? So it's something that we've considered. We don't have a really easy solution to. There's a couple of different ways that we're looking at addressing this. One is, the other flip side question is, gee, can you make all of these APIs you just talked about available on-premises Active Directory so that I can just go to that? And that's something that we're very interested in doing because we think that this architecture is a more flexible and simpler architecture and that it will have real legs. So, but that will take some time to come, probably, for us to get all of these protocols, the OAuth and the Directory Graph API and such, mounted down on Windows Server Active Directory. So that I don't have a really crisp answer for you other than we have looked at that. And it's kind of, once you start pulling the dependency chain, it gets real interesting. Like, well, how are you going to authenticate to that LDAP head in the cloud?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I think I didn't quite get the authentication piece of it. That helped me understand it. But getting those APIs in-house would be really handy. Thanks.
Okay. Oh, hi, Jeremy.
Hi, how's it going? So, you know, when I was signing up for TechEd and I was registering for all the sessions that I wanted to do, it offered me the opportunity to log in to the My TechEd page using my Windows Live ID. And so one of the questions that I have is, you know, when do we think we might be able to use our Azure Active Directory security principles to log into applications and services that are already enabled for Windows Live ID?
So this is that are already enabled for Windows Live ID?
Right. So TechEd, mytechEd.com has an option to say sign in with Windows Live ID, and my company only having user security principles in the Azure Active Directory, we would like to use those usernames and passwords for those applications. So thoughts on when we might see something like that?
So this is very, very interesting because it gets to the heart of how within organizations we're going to make it easy or not to connect applications to the directory. Now, you're special, Jeremy, because I know that you're like the big boss in your company. So if you went, let's say that you went to the TechEd sign-up page and you said, I want to sign in, and there was a button there that said, link my Active Directory, or enable my login to the TechEd site using my Azure Active Directory, and you press that button, and it wanted you to be some sort of tenant administrator for the Azure Active Directory before it allowed you to do that. Well, you go, yeah, absolutely. Either I'm the tenant admin, or the guy who's the tenant admin works for me, so I'm just going to make this happen, right? Now, there's people in this audience here who aren't going to be the tenant admin and are going to TechEd and do want to use their Azure Active Directory sign-in to get into the TechEd app. How are we going to arrange this so that that user will be able to go and say, yeah, I do want to sign in with my Azure Active Directory, and the service principal for the TechEd application will get created in the namespace, but they're just an ordinary user, if you will, in their company. This is the nut we have to crack on the delegated administration of the data in the directory so that we can make that scenario possible. I want to make that scenario possible, but I'm not going to say when I think it'll be possible.
So from a link and federation perspective with Office 365, as a tenant administrator, I have a choice. I can say, I would like to federate, and again, we're not talking about security federation, we're talking about we're talking voice over IP federation, but I would like to allow my users to federate with any partner, or I don't want them, and then there's a list of things that I don't want them to do. Or my option on the link federation side is, do not federate with anybody except for this list. So would it be possible to say, like, as the security federation guy, let my employees federate their identity with anybody except for this list, or maybe
a deny list,
or
like have a deny list. Or another thing that we've thought about is, what does it really mean if an end user went and said, "I want to use this application," and let's say that the policy was in place so that the service principal got created, and now the TechEd site is linked up with that directory for that customer. How much of the directory can it see?
From a TechEd perspective, all they really care about is authentication.
Well, okay, and maybe right. maybe it can't see into the directory at all. Maybe it can only get the user can sign in, and that's
right.
It. Right. So that could be one angle. Another angle is all that it could see. When you sign up for TechEd, you have to give the rigor mortis of your mail address and everything like that. That's all in the directory. We could pre-populate that if we could look into it. Maybe that application could only see that particular person's account. And maybe that user is the only one that can actually sign into the application, and other random users who haven't signed up in this way can't log into the account. So we're looking at these different models about how we would scope it so that it would be acceptable to the people who set the security controls that these kinds of things would be possible. This is exactly a scenario that we want to have, so that you don't have to, I am working with this company. I'm going to TechEd as a person from this company. Why do I have to get a live ID to sign in? It shouldn't have to be that way. I should be able to use my corporate identity.
So it sounds to me like you guys are really trying to solve the much bigger and more complicated problem before you were to say, hey, we'll just let people authenticate with their Azure Active Directory credentials for other applications that are already hosting or supporting Windows Live.
Oh, well, as it turns out, when you go into the problem, the problem ends up being similar. The way that sites integrate with Windows Live ID presumes a particular set of APIs.
Right.
And we're presuming another set of APIs, and to be like perfectly compatible is a difficult proposition. Be perfectly compatible and to light up other things. So it's not as simple as just, hey, we can wave a wand and now that Live ID thing extends to a different kind of sign-in. Unfortunately, it wasn't that easy.
So it sounds like it's pretty far in the future then.
I hope not. I worked on Active Directory for the last 10 years. I'm going to work on Windows Azure Active Directory for a bit here, but I hope it doesn't take us 10 years to get to the scenario that you just talked about. I hope it is much faster than that. It has to be much faster than that for us to really be successful here.
Thanks.
Good question. Well, actually, the conceptual model where, like you said, you authenticate, you get a security token, it has some information about you in it, you give that to a resource looks at a policy, decides if you're in or not, that's all the same. That conceptual model's all the same. What's changed, well, what I was talking about with Jeremy there was about, well, how do applications get registered in the directory? That was the thrust. I don't know, maybe it was difficult. Maybe I wasn't using... The right language there. What we were talking about was, well, when an application does get registered, how does it get registered, and what kind of rights does it have as an application when it gets registered? So you're saying, well, isn't that just the standard access control model? Your Azure Active Directory account.
Yeah, exactly.
Live ID. You could. How many administrators in the room? How many here? Okay. And how many would be willing to let their Azure Active Directory could be completely promiscuous in that sense? Okay. There's only one, and he was being sarcastic. So now you're probably more enlightened. In fact, Kim Cameron would come. Kim Cameron's one of our distinguished engineers. He'd probably come pat you on the back and go, "This is a man who sees the future," right? That's because it's your ID. So you can use it anywhere. And Google wants you to use it everywhere because that's the value they get out of it. When we build the Azure Active Directory, it's under your control. It's not our directory. It's the organization's directory, and it's up to you to decide the security controls for it. And if you don't want your identities to be used everywhere, they won't be used everywhere. But we have to manage the balance of how do you allow the people in your organization to get the value they need out of the cloud apps, right? And not get back into this whole friction point of I have to talk to IT first, when IT doesn't want to be in the way anyway. Nobody in IT wants to set access controls. That's ridiculous. They're not actually responsible for who gets access to what. That's the business that's supposed to do. But I digress. I want to go back to your point just for a second. What's really changed here is the protocols. The protocols have changed, and we've gone to very web-based protocols so that we have the big reach. And then there's a few other things that have changed. Like, if you look inside a token, a Kerberos ticket that you get today from Active Directory, you only find SIDs, the unique ID of the user, the unique ID of groups. you don't find really rich information about the user, like something simple you'd want to display in the screen, their username, their email address. And we can put that stuff in these tokens that we have now much more easily. There will be a thing that's a security identifier, by the way, in these tokens, because you can never rely on an email address not being reused or a user's name being renamed. So there will be an immutable unique identifier for users. And we're debating right now exactly what the format should be for that. How long should it be? How should we encode it? These are the problems that we deal with. And those will be in the tokens, and that's how you'll be anchoring things like access control decisions in the future. Question at the microphone, and then we'll get the gentleman.
Yeah, everything you've shown has been a credential of account and password. Are there plans to use smart card cryptographic credentials?
Yeah, absolutely. So multi-factor authentication is, we believe, is important. And in the case where I showed applications having service principles with their own identity, right out the gate, we'll support using asymmetric keys. So if you can use certificates for an application to authenticate itself, instead of having an application have a symmetric key or a password, just because we know that that's much stronger. Go ahead.
For hybrid architectures, where some of the system is on-premise and the other is on the cloud, what is the advantage of having two replicas of Active Directories? Why don't we rely only on the one on-premise?
So what we discovered when we built BPOS, and later we were building Office 365, was the applications in the cloud, for them to talk to the on-premises directory, the performance just wasn't there. Like, if they need to do a query, the user is sitting at the application, they're doing something, they press a button to do some sort of search, and that causes a query to come down to on-premises and back up to the cloud. The latency made the end user experience unacceptable. So we had to lift it into the cloud. And when we did that, the benefits of being able to connect other applications to that data were enormous.
My organization is looking strongly into both Office 365 and infrastructure as a service. So we're sort of kind of got our names up there. But what we saw, we're trying to work in pushing into 365. Is there a plan to have a glide path where, because I'm already going to sync my AD to 365. So is there going to be a plan to migrate that into the Azure AD? It's sort of like, hey, put some buttons and now it's AD. And
as a matter of fact, yeah, this is an excellent question. If you were today to go get Office 365, you're actually getting Azure Active Directory. And at some point, it will just, that same thing you're using for Office 365 and that you've done a sync and federation relationship for will become something that you can use with other applications. So there's you won't have to migrate. It's just going to turn into Azure Active Directory.
Okay. And the other question is, and I know this may not be more appropriate for the other session, but with infrastructure as a service, that we're going to create a domain out there in the cloud on a Hyper-V. Is there a thought of how the Azure AD environment might be either linked or sort of integrated in any way to our infrastructure domain? Because I know, you know, if you think of it conceptually, all you're going to be doing at that point is more what he was saying, literally taking your domain and sticking it in the cloud versus something more federation-minded with Azure. Is there going to be any kind of opportunity to leverage the fact they're both being hosted by Microsoft?
There may be. Initially, the relationship is going to be the same between Windows Server Active Directory and Windows Azure Active Directory. That sync and federation relationship that you're setting up for Office 365, that connectivity will be the same regardless if those are running on-premises on bare metal or on VMs on-premises or in VMs in the cloud. It's going to be the same relationship between those two. We may, in the future, find ways to simplify that, if you're running it in Azure VMs, running Windows Server Active Directory in Azure VMs, and you want to connect it to Windows Azure Active Directory. But we haven't got to that place yet where we found interesting ways to simplify.
So it goes back to what you're saying about the APIs not being available in the on-prem AD. So, you know, if I'm building an application, which we are, that's going to run in the cloud, then you're kind of considering, okay, do I want to use this sort of AD universe, Azure AD, to do these JSON queries and stuff like that, instead of, hey, I've got a real domain in the cloud that I can just LDAP to.
Yep.
So is there an architectural guidance that we can go with it, other than the fact that you're just going to have to wait to keep them separated for a while?
At least initially, you're going to look at your application, and I believe that very quickly, it's going to become obvious which is more appropriate to use. Like, if you're building a custom line of business IT app that's an evolution of an application that you already have and that you're moving it into the cloud because of the IaaS hosting benefits, then probably staying with Windows Server Active Directory makes sense. If you're building a multi-tenant software as a service application, you're not going to do that, right? Because your demands are very different. So, and there are probably some class of applications where it'll be harder to make that decision, but I think that it'll be pretty obvious pretty quickly which way you're going to want to go. And we'll need to provide some documentation to help people through that thought process. And David Chappell is sitting here in the room. He's been listening diligently. He's written quite a bit for us about identity in the past. I'm hoping to enlist his help in building that documentation to help people think through this process. All right, I'll take another one. Can you elaborate on the scenario a bit more? So the question was, could we imagine a world where, let me see if I can, I can tell you something that we are thinking about. Tell me if this is close to what you were talking about. One of the things that's different about the cloud than on-premises is that when you're building an application in the cloud, every user on the planet is suddenly implicated as a possible user of your application. Whereas in the old days, you were really only thinking about your employees inside your extranet. Well, that didn't last very long. And then there were partners and there were customers. But you're thinking about everybody. So one of the things that we're interested in doing in Windows Azure Active Directory is the ability to have someone be in your directory, but they authenticate somewhere else. So I have partners or customers that I work with, and they have Facebook accounts and Google accounts, and I want to give them access to my applications that are joined to my Azure Active Directory namespace. So can I create principles for them where their password isn't present? Instead, it says this user authenticates as this person at Facebook. And once they've done that, then they have this unique security identifier that belongs to me, and I can give them access to my application. And that way, I can imagine enabling collaboration with wide varieties of users, be they from these social identity providers or web identity providers, or from other Azure Active Directory namespaces, or even other systems that are federated through classic federation mechanisms like SAML or WS Federation. That's something that we're looking at. It won't be in the preview. But it's something that we think is interesting and unique in the cloud. People would have a hard time imagining, I can have these people from Facebook in my Active Directory. Like, that's just weird. But in the cloud, I can have these people from Facebook in my cloud directory. Yeah, of course. You know, it's strange how, you know, what's different? It's a data center. There's a firewall between them. But the way that you think suddenly changes. But now there's another dimension to this, which is, let's say that I've built an application and a user comes to me and they log in with Facebook, and then they also want to be able to bind their Google account to that same principle because they want to be able to log on with either of them. So we're also looking at that. It's the same problem, but just adding another dimension where I can associate multiple different foreign accounts with this principle, and then they all map down to that one security identifier when they try to access resources that are joined to my namespace. Question?
Good day. I got here a little late. Have you spoken about digital rights management, and will any of that be pushed into Azure or Office 365?
So digital rights management, we are working on cloud-based information protection systems. So that, because one of the big concerns with data in the cloud is, how do we keep it safe if it gets taken out of these data centers for some reason? How do we encrypt it in motion and at rest? I didn't speak directly to that today. In fact, I'm not sure if there are any talks about it here at TechEd, but it is definitely something that we're investing in the identity team at Microsoft, in the cloud and on-premises. All right, one more question?
Yeah, are you guys planning on giving any type of APIs for the on-premise Active Directory so we could develop applications on-premise that will use the same APIs to push into the cloud?
It's something that we think is important and that we're interested in doing. By the time the developer preview comes out and we start laying out more of the roadmap, we may have something more to say about that. But really, the bottom line is we think it'll be easier for people to build applications in the long run if they know, okay, the new world is the REST-based access to the directory, OAuth, OpenID Connect, SAML, WS Federation. Good, okay. That's all that I need to worry about, and my app can live anywhere. It doesn't matter, on-prem, in the cloud. That's something that we want to get to, but because, again, of the different rates at which on-premises software evolves and cloud software, it won't all come magically at once. So it'll be sometime in the future when we get there. That's my way of saying, yeah, later. We'll get to that. You could just write a proxy, yeah. I'm sure, you know, probably what'll happen is some enterprising and fast-moving third-party vendor will build this capability before I can. Sometimes these things happen. All right. I think we're out of questions. Thank you very much for coming today. I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.